19 after the hour, so we just took time away from our lunch. So we're going to be starting with the licensing. Actually, the thematic discussion that's before us now is online distribution or digital distribution goals for 2007. And the chair of the programming committee, Rob Robinson, has been very active in moving this issue forward, and is going to start off by giving a little presentation. He's going to throw it to me for a couple of comments on a couple of slides. We're going to talk about the Licensing and Distribution Task Force, which was formed as a result of a motion by Bob Lederer at our last meeting, talk about progress, and just talk about the significance of these efforts and what the opportunities are. And after this, which is, I think, about 16 slides, we will throw it open for a broader discussion. We're hoping that our web person, Pete Caracas, who's really a tech person more generally, and John Almella, and the managers in very particular will be very active in this discussion, because anything we decide to do, as well as the ED and the CFO, because anything we decide to do in this area is basically going to take their efforts to implement. And the reason that this section was called distribution goals has a little bit to do with the idea of what the role of governance is, and I'll just take the opportunity to say my view is that what we should be doing is to establish broad goals that are formed in consultation.
The camera's blocking us.
Yeah, maybe.
Could somebody please move the camera? So the point is that really what governance should be doing is working with management to set broad goals. And I say with management because if we set goals that management has no input into and they're responsible for implementing it, you can pretty much guarantee it's not going to come out looking like you expect. So the idea is that we need to set some broad goals and ask staff for an implementation plan. And so one of the hopes is that in this discussion and in the next one, the topic of the next one was on community outreach and programming development, which was suggested by Ambrose in the coordinating committee. The idea is, the goal is to talk with the managers and the national office staff, come up with some broad goals, and ask for them to come back to us with their plan about how that can be implemented, and then figure out what we need to do in order to move these goals forward. So that's the topic for today. And I'm going to turn it over to Rob, who, in addition to being chair of the programming committee, has also been the convener and chair of the Licensing and Distribution Task Force. After he talks and I talk, we're going to open it out more broadly. So go ahead, Rob.
Okay, we'd like to talk about the direction we'd like to go by thinking of it as civic media. And before we go directly into the mission of the Licensing and Distribution Task Force, I'd like us all to think about what happened in 1946, 47, 48, when Lou Hill and the founders of Pacifica began the organization. They were on a wave of new media. Radio had begun. It had become nationally popular. And in the early 40s, television had been inaugurated, and it was just on the cusp of becoming the second big wave of mass media. So mass media and technology were beginning to take the public by storm. In addition to that, one of the radical things that Lou Hill did as a pacifist was to make the point that he wanted media that was non-commercial. He didn't want to be preoccupied with selling people things, and because of that preoccupation, essentially commodifying the audience. He wanted it to be a form of civic media. So what does that mean to say that it's civic media? Well, initially it means it does not serve the interest of governments or corporations. It's about the full distribution of public information. It's about providing access to news from sources that are not commonly available in mainstream media. It's about empowering communities. It's particularly empowering them by providing them with outlets for their skills and their energies. It's about the cultural welfare. We all remember the 50s, those of us that are old enough. It was an era in which there was cultural conformity. And it was also designed to contribute lasting understanding. We talked about that on the first day of this meeting, so I won't go over that. But these were the concepts that were embedded in what civic media has become. I think the concept worked then, and I think it's going to work now. But we are also on the cusp of a huge technological change. And in fact, the communities that they looked at in Richmond and Berkeley in California in the late 40s, the early 50s, are being replaced by a community which basically has a global participation. So what's the big difference between the opportunities for FM radio and digital distribution today? Well, there is one difference, and that is that when people initially got a subscription to KPFA in the late 40s, they got an FM receiver because FM signals were not readily available on the existing AM sets. Now we don't have that problem. We have a new paradigm in radio, and let's just quantify that for you a little bit. There currently satellite radio, which is a digital form. The two big players are XM, that has 7 million subscribers, and Sirius, which has got 6 and change. And there are a few others out there. So satellite radio has got maybe 20 million listeners right now. Internet radio, the figures are a little bit different because people that are listening to the Internet are also being counted as listening to FM radio. But we suspect it's between 35 and 50 million people that are routinely listening to Internet radio. The presence of MP3 players, podcasting, has begun. There are perhaps 50 million MP3 players extant now. In 2006, last year, as of the end of the Christmas season, 31 million MP3 players had shipped, and they are planning, according to the Consumer Electronics Association, that at least 41 million will ship this year. So, pardon me? In the U.S., in the United States. So some people like David, for example, have 8 MP3 players. So we really don't... We're not proposing that digital radio now has an audience of 120 million, but you can see where the numbers are going. There's a huge difference between listening to digitally distributed content and what we have, the paradigm for FM radio.
He's emptying his pocket.
Okay, David. First of all, there are all these platforms out there. Anybody that wants to put up an Internet stream has got a worldwide audience. Secondly, and I think this is perhaps the most important thing that we're learning about it, is that these devices, particularly the MP3 players and satellite radio, give people the ability to listen to what they want when they want it. In other words, they've kind of assumed the role of being the program director for their own personal radio station. Also, this is not a passive media. There have been surveys of young listeners, 35 and under, that show the big difference between the way they listen to radio and we do, for example, is they take the content that they get, audio content, video content, and they pass it on. They use it as social formats. I'm sure you've heard of MySpace, which people love. The same thing is happening with blogs. The most popular blog site, the Daily Coast, is a left-wing blog, and its effect, it's an Internet community. It works very much like a community. So there's a big change in the culture of radio that has changed not just the way people listen to it, but what everybody in FM radio is seeing is they're losing audience. And they're losing it to the Internet, they're losing it to the satellite, and they're losing it to the people on MP3. That's the reality. It's not the situation where we're handing people an FM set, and this is the big new technology. The technology is in place. The question is, are we going to catch up to it? The other thing that you should notice is that we're not the first ones on the left. You will find that a number of civic organizations are putting content out on the Internet. One of the ways they're doing it is they're using licensing mechanisms like Creative Commons that we'll talk about in a little bit. But, for example, the Free Press conference that some of you attended is going to be available on the Internet now. It's there now. It's for free. We may be selling those things as a promotion, though, on some of our stations later on. Yes, David?
We don't sell content. We offer these gifts
as premiums. I'm sorry.
We've done it with other content like the Loose Change. exchange video that's available for free download online and had a very good response. But the important point is all of this stuff is going to be a very important component, I suspect, of the February fund drives throughout the network because the content is so important and emphasizes the need for civic media. So I guarantee at least that a number of the stations are going to be playing a lot of this content, any of which can be downloaded. So online, because the people who created it want the broadest audience possible. They are not primarily concerned with the greatest revenue possible. They want the broadest audience possible because they know that if they provide that service, they as an organization will end up getting supported through donations. And that's our business model and economic model and always has been. And we are going to demonstrate in the coming month that we also can offer this stuff packaged in various ways as a thank you gift and motivate listeners to donate on that basis.
So the caution, and then I'm going to go to David, the caution for us is, you know, not only is our competition worldwide, we're no longer the only producers of progressive content. We're competing with people all over the world. The good part of that is, the opportunity for us, the upside of that is, that our potential audience now is also a worldwide audience. So when Margaret Prescott spoke with us yesterday about the women's collective in Uganda that's trying to get a station up, Pacifica should be on the cutting edge of working with groups like that because we don't have the same barriers anymore. There is a worldwide audience out there, and I'm sure the people at Free Speech Radio News could give us story after story after story where Pacifica may be able to take leadership on some of the issues that are shaping not just local affairs and national affairs, but global affairs. But the whole point of this is that it's going to require broader participation for us to get into it. Let me just tell you briefly about our task force. Bob Lederer made a motion at our October meeting that because we could not resolve all of the issues around copyright and other matters within the context of the programming committee that was trying to pass the policy, Bob made a motion that a specific task force consisting of representatives of management, unpaid staff organizations, and unions come together to discuss the issues of licensing and distribution and report back to the PNB. So that's what we're in the process of doing now. We have a number of participants on that task force from WBAI, including Bernard White, the program director. Greg Guma and Lonnie Hicks have regularly participated in that meeting. We have representatives from the archives. Eddie Gevins, Ursula Rudenberg has participated from the affiliates program, Peter Caracas, and of course John Almella with our web department and our technical supervisor have been on almost every one of the calls. We've had 5 calls since December. And we've had special guests like Ken Friedman of WFMU 90.1 in Jersey City, New Jersey, that we're going to talk about a little bit. They've been on the Internet since the mid-90s. They now have 20 or 30 podcasts, and they're actually setting up a PodSafe archive. We've also had significant participation in every meeting from Professor Lawrence Lessig of Stanford University. Professor Lessig was the special master in the U.S. versus Microsoft case, and he is a recognized world authority on intellectual property on the Internet. I mean, and his clients include people from the side that wants to see a larger media commons where everyone can graze and get access to content, as well as people in the corporate world that are concerned about protecting the copyrights that exist. So we've had excellent participation. Dan Siegel, our legal counsel, has been on the calls. And as soon as we work out an agreement around the unpaid staff, we're going to get the expertise of John Krigler, our FCC counsel, before going forward. So that's some of the things that we've been doing. We feel that we're about one meeting away from having close agreement, wouldn't you say, Bob, on an agreement between the unpaid staff and the network?
One or two.
One or two. Before we can go forward and tell the PNB that we want to put our content out on the Internet, we have to have the agreement from the producers, particularly those unpaid producers, who are the owners of the content, that they agree that Pacifica can redistribute it, and in particular, that they're in agreement with the use of the Creative Commons licenses. And we'll go into that in a little bit more detail. There are a number of other issues regarding copyrights and administration, but I think the important thing is we have a group, including both of our legal counsels and nationally recognized experts, and we're moving forward to resolve the questions that the PNB and the network needs to understand before taking that vital step. So, David, would you like to talk about some of the why licensing is such a challenge?
First of all, also we've had Mia Garlick, who is the Creative Commons General Counsel, to help us, and a number of other programmers. And I just want to say about the Licensing and Distribution Task Force, and maybe Bob can comment too. It started off with a lot of uncertainty. What is this about? Where is this going? The membership in the calls has been increasing steadily as people find out a little bit more about it, and I've been really happy to find that it's been a very productive environment. It's not the usual struggle and tangle. It seems to be everybody on the call is seeming to come to the understanding that we need to be able to move somehow into this world, and has become to appreciate the central role of copyright in that, and the orientation of the network to do what's best for every party. And that has done a lot, I think, to make the interaction be very productive. One of the things that I think informs this effort is that in the future, given the proliferation of platforms and the hunger of all of them for content in order to be able to generate audience, essentially many different sources are going to be in competition for talented producers to contribute content. And those producers, particularly in the civic sector, whose goal is to reach the broadest audience more than to get paid for every iteration, when that's their goal, and that goal, incidentally, is being adopted even by a number of commercial content providers, many of them understand and want the ability to be in as many of those venues as possible. So we're going to have to be providing services that are attractive to producers, that are going to make talented people want to be present on our platforms, want to distribute through Pacifica, because they're going to have a lot of other options. Right now, in a world where you only have one or two civic FM stations, of course, anybody who wants to do civic broadcasting comes to the only civic broadcaster. But in this world, they have many options to distribute. So if we don't serve their interests, both their political, ethical, and civic interests, as well as their potential economic interests, if we're not the ones who are recognized as the people who are doing what's most attractive to producers, they'll go to someone else who does it better. And despite the power of the FM transmitters, which will remain powerful, nobody is arguing that those will decline to a point of irrelevance, they're actually going to be a very important component of the effort. Nonetheless, if the terms of working with Pacifica are terms that producers are offended by, they will choose other options. I don't know if you want to weigh in, if you agree that, Bob, that that's maybe one of the reasons, that orientation, that it's about figuring out ways to serve the interests of producers and the foundation, that's made that a very friendly discussion. Would you agree?
Okay. Good.
Yeah. What we're doing is we're basically letting the producers in these agreements indicate that they authorize Pacifica to distribute this via these licenses, and they can indicate what type of license they want. It can be distributed. Okay.
I'll get to that. So the key thing about the role of copyright is if we're going to be there's two points. One is the distribution on Pacifica-controlled platforms. But there's another idea, and it's prevalent. It's used very much in the open source software movement, which is you get much broader distribution when you have terms that allow anybody to redistribute it. In a sense, you want to deputize everybody who cares about your programming to be a redistributor of it. And the Creative Commons license that we're considering, this hybrid license, is intended to protect economic interests so that while availing yourself of the capacity that anybody may have to develop distribution, you ensure that if people are using it to generate revenue, that the revenue redounds to Pacifica. So you get both sides. You get the broadest distribution possible, but you get protection if anybody's using it as part of a model to generate revenue. And as Brian has made the point repeatedly, without knowing that you have the rights to distribute, the barriers to being able to distribute anything are very high. Now, in places like MySpace and YouTube and Flickr and other places like that, there is already what some members of actually the call, who there's a member of USOC who's a poet, who talks about there's a union of writers and poets who are considering bringing an action against Google and against, was it MySpace or YouTube? I forget. For violation of copyright. They are generating, they have a business model that's using their creative content without their permission to generate revenue. Now, the people in the greatest position to bring such suits are those corporate entities that have a lot of money behind this stuff, and yet they're standing back because these mechanisms are actually building huge audience for them. And they're not ready right now. They don't want to interfere with that, though they might. And just a historical point, very often civic sectors build communities and then commercial entities come in and they commodify the community and turn it into a market. That's the history, for example, of most major sports leagues. Communities built baseball to build an audience, and then Major League Baseball comes in and commodifies it. And that is could be a future part of the future in this sphere. Once you build a critical mass of people who are using something, you shift the terms. And I suspect, and Pete and others can comment, on the way in which existing models and platforms that are being developed right now may shift the terms. A good example is Skype. It provided free internet calling, and once it built up to a critical mass of users who were accustomed to all the advantages and got to know the advantages, then a fee came. And one of the values of establishing a commonwealth model is that your content can't be recaptured by a commercial sector. It stays in the civic sector permanently, and it builds over time exponentially, because as the audience grows, you have more and more contributors and redistributors. So then, now, what are some of the challenges? Maybe I hope Brian can speak to this as he has on a couple of the calls. Addie's talked about it. Other people have talked about it, which is, okay, you want to distribute something. Let us assume that you get an agreement with the producer. How do you know that the producer had the right to grant the kind of distribution rights we're agreeing with them about? In other words, if they have copyrighted content within it, or if they have content of a speech that they didn't get the sign-off to, how do they know that they can warrant it? And what happens if we place this on these platforms licensed in this way? So that's one thing we're working hard to resolve with the Creative Commons General Counsel, our counsel, and other people who are knowledgeable in this area. And people have brought up the fact that the question about whether this is going to be an overwhelming technical challenge to identify this question of rights. And it is a challenge that has to be solved. But again, as Brian has commented, a whole lot of stuff that's in the archives, he doesn't know what he can do with because that work hasn't been done, and it isn't being done consistently, even though you've distributed a release form to all the stations, right? My understanding is you do not get those back on any regular basis because there is no enforced policy that anybody has to do that before they contribute content to the archive.
Let's let Brian comment if he'd like to.
I'm not sure which question I'm answering. So yes, speaker releases, we updated them in I think the year 2000 with John Krigler. They were distributed to the stations, and speaker releases have been at the stations for decades and decades and decades. The archives does have like maybe one file cabinet full of papers, but they don't actually relate to the archive recording. I'll have a title and a name, but I don't really know what it goes to. We don't receive material from the foundation or the stations for the archives with speaker releases or any information.
Despite the fact that it's clear that they need that if in the future they're going to be able to do what the things that they might choose to do or we might choose to do with that content. Now, the Creative Commons hybrid license has two components to it. One is a non-commercial portion, and that non-commercial portion has a couple of different flavors. And I don't have on my computer the Creative Commons site, but anybody who has one can go to creativecommons.org. And it offers a few options. We are almost certainly going to want the attribution option, and I would suspect producers would too. It says, no matter what you do with this, you have to attribute it. We may also want to add something. There is a no derivatives component, which says you can't alter this. If you can play it if you want, you can distribute it, but you can't cut it up and use it. We probably want to allow derivatives, but in one case, the case where we have a fundraising appeal on it, we probably want to be able to ensure that if that content is used or distributed, the fundraising appeal stays there, because that's part of our revenue model. Okay? And let's see, attribution. Oh, and then the other part is share alike. And what share alike says is, if you make a derivative of this, you must license it under the same terms. Namely, you can do anything. Anybody else can redistribute it, make derivatives of it. And that's sort of from the open source software concept, and that's the basis on which the Commonwealth grows exponentially, and people cannot pull stuff out of the Commonwealth, rely on the effort of the Commonwealth to create private value that's unavailable. And that's why the civic sector can continue to grow. The other portion is a commercial portion. And that's so the Creative Commons is something that the first part is creative, is up on Creative Commons site and is defined. The second part, the commercial portion, is a portion we define, which we say these are the terms by which you have to abide if you're going to use this for any purpose that generates revenue. And that could be as simple as saying you have to contact us before you do it. But the reason that's probably not a good idea is lots and lots of people are building new economic models that we haven't even heard of yet. Like you didn't hear of YouTube or MySpace 2 years ago, but now it's huge. What we want is to allow anybody to use our content to build, what I want and you may want, and I hope you want, is for anybody to be able to use Pacifica content to build distribution, and if they come up with a successful economic model, then is when we get paid. I.e., we are not restricting them from using our content to build audience. We are saying if you succeed in an economic model that builds audience, then we share in the revenue. So it could be as simple as, say, you check back with us, or it could define certain terms which say within the given sphere of activity, you would owe us 10%. With other, you would owe us such and such. And people say, well, how would you enforce that? With any copyright, take software. There are some people who violate copyright, but the amounts are so small and widely distributed, it doesn't matter. The big companies, people who are generating a lot of revenue, you can afford to enforce your copyright, and that's when it matters. So the commercial portion is something we define, and our general counsel will be responsible for drafting, and it's quite flexible. We can define how we want to do it. So the idea is that this protects us. The one point is on affiliates, and one of the things we recognize is that in our model we receive funding from affiliates, so affiliates are using content to generate revenue. So we might say, for example, if you're using this content, we require that you be an affiliate, and then they might make a negotiation with our affiliate director, or we might have specific terms for different kinds of affiliates. There are a lot of different ways to structure it. That's still up in the air. So the lessons, and maybe Pete is probably better at this than I am, because he's built a website for us now that has many of these features. So I'll skip this quickly, but empowering participants makes people want to participate. Lowering barriers rather than raising them builds audience. Creating a space in which community can form. So you build the infrastructure, it's like building a scaffold, and then the scaffold becomes populated. And when you get it right, they take off exponentially. When you get it wrong, they don't. They die off. And so as an organization, we may or may not get it right, but we want this kind of content that we're producing to be wherever the infrastructure is produced properly, assuming that we can get the support we need. Do you want to talk about WFMU?
Sure. Last May, we had a brief address by Ken Friedman, the general manager of WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey. They decided WFMU is an eclectic music station, okay? It's not a news and public affairs station. But they made a determination in the mid-90s that they were going into digital distribution. They began on the Internet. Their Arbitron audience now is currently about 150,000. They have the same or larger audience on the Internet. And by the way, while they generate approximately 10% membership for their FM listeners, they're generating the same amount of support for their fund drives among the internet listeners. Plus, the internet listeners tend to give slightly larger amounts of money. So they began with the FM signal and the internet, and at the time, everybody thought, that the programmers thought, this is just some kind of technological joke. The general manager now tells the programmers that the FM signal is the marketing tool for their internet streams. And he's told us on a number of occasions, I tell the programmers, I don't just want to show, if you can make a 24-hour stream that you can update every week, we'll put it up there. Now, obviously, it's good stuff or the audience wouldn't be coming. But yes, David.
And that's critical for us, because rather than the dynamic that we now have, which says only a limited number of people can do this, this says, yes, we can take all comers. Your programming committees and councils could then just be reviewing whether stuff was mission-driven, not whether it had to be better than something else. Yes. And that we could say yes, 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 instead of what we say now, which is no, no, no.
Now, additionally, they raised their money in 14 days. They have a couple of things. In addition to the 20 or 30 podcasts that they've got, they have a social blog that they use, which has an audience that overlaps, but it's a separate audience. In addition to that, they inaugurated this year a PodSafe archive. David, do you want to talk a little bit about what that means? It's a weird word. So
okay. What it means is they got a $400,000 grant for 2 years to go out and record music, actually within their studios and around their signal area, and license it in the following way. The problem is that podcasters can't use copyrighted music in their podcasts without paying fees. So they can't, if you're doing it for civic purposes, if you don't already have a lot of distribution, you can't afford to build distribution, even if you had a business model that would work. So a PodSafe archive is an archive of content that you can use in any program. Now, anyone who ever listened to the Grateful Dead knows that essentially all the Dead's content is available under these licensing terms. Now, the Dead are a band that didn't actually make most of its money off of record sales, right? They gave it all free, away free. They let people patch into their boards. They built a huge community and became a marketing giant, selling every kind of knick-knack and anything you want. And they didn't try, incidentally, to get licensing fees from every hippie who was selling a shirt, a tie-dye shirt with a bear on it at every one of their concerts. They didn't worry about that because they knew they were going to get paid because of the loyalty.
They were a great band.
Because
they
were.
I'm with you, Dave.
Anyhow, so a PodSafe archive is essentially, and no disrespect to any dead listeners out there. A PodSafe archive is a whole archive of diverse content, more than just dead tunes that you can use in your pods in your archive. The attribution component means that everybody who's going to be using this has to say at the end of their broadcast, this is from the WFMU PodSafe archive. So WFMU's brand, to use a nice corporate word, is going to be spreading very rapidly because everybody's going to go there to get that content. Now, in addition, whoever contributed is going to get recognized. So any band that has their stuff up there that's used in a lot of PodSafe archives, their name's going to get known. And they may have content for sale in other places. Just like everywhere on the net, people are letting people download their content and use it. So within that PodSafe archive, depending on what licensing you use, you can use different kind of restrictions. You could even restrict the term. You could say this can only be used until 2010 if you wanted to. Right? So they're looking at and working with Creative Commons in part to make some decisions on how they're going to license it. One other point, which is we can partner with organizations. Archive.org is one. There are others who will give us free bandwidth. And, I mean, we don't know. We have to make that content. We're not contact. We haven't made it yet. But there are a number of organizations that may provide us with server space and bandwidth if we're going with this kind of a licensing approach. And so working with others rather than thinking we have to do everything in-house is going to exponentially expand the capabilities. Did you want to?
Well, let me tell you one development. When the internet hit, initially, the thing that the internet was great for regarding media like CDs and DVDs and videos was you could sell the stuff on the internet. You know, Amazon came out. Then as the technology changed, it became a way to access that stuff, and you had the Napsters of the world coming out making it possible for people to download records, movies, and other content. And then the copyright wars kicked in, and some of those places went out of business. And basically, the large media conglomerates tried to shut down the technology so that they could protect what they own. But the technology has continued, and what's happened is the internet has created such enormous audiences around these innovations like YouTube that now the record companies are going to the internet purveyors and saying, well, this band just came out, we'll let you download their hit song in hopes that those audiences are then going to buy something from iTunes. So you now see the large companies working with iTunes to make their content more readily available. Our hope is that if we go into this direction and carefully protect ourselves with good copyright through the Creative Commons, that we're going to be able in the future to then negotiate with some of these record companies so that we have more flexible terms in what we can offer over our civic media.
Oh, and one point about the Positive
yes.
Archive. Some of those terms might include the ability to package content on that by WFMU in CDs that only WFMU might have the right to do that. They would have a revenue sharing agreement with the artists, but speaking to Bob's record label idea, they could be donating this because it's a donation to a civic organization, and if that organization wanted to create marketable CDs, kind of the way Mark Roberts' company works. He packages R&B stuff, old R&B stuff that's in the public domain and sells it. So you could have arrangements that gave you rights with respect to that.
Yeah. So let me just mention a couple of the types of things that Pacifica could consider doing with something like this. We could take our news content, interviews, news specials, sound bites, and we could provide that content. We can take programs, the best of Pacifica that we've been talking about as an organization for decades, we could actually do the best of Pacifica on the internet. We could develop blogs so that people from Pacifica could talk about the different news stories and let those things develop. We could create a separate space where content from non-Pacifica media can make their work available, particularly the affiliates. We should be doing more making affiliates content available to our listeners, or even collaborating with the affiliates in producing those things. So those are some of the opportunities that we have. I'd just like to make a couple of other recommendations.
You want to wait till the modest proposal?
Oh, sure. I was going to work with others, though.
Okay.
All right. This is a big step and a big consideration for the board, and we really feel very confident that with the participation of Dan Siegel, John Krigler, Professor Lessig, and Council Garlick, we're going to make it work. However, moving into the technological area, we're going to need people with other capacity. Professor Lessig has agreed to put us in touch with Brewster Kahle, who is an internet developer who does archive.org. They have a great interest in seeing a civic media organization like this emerge that's not interested in creating a market and then closing it, but keeping it open and getting more content available to the broad public. These people have access to bandwidth. For example, archive.org has made their bandwidth available to Democracy Now! For free. So we know that there are people in the internet world that have got more experience than we do and have resources and are willing to work with us. And we hope to have greater discussions with people like this and bring Pete Caracas, Brian DeShazer, John Almella, our technical people, into the discussion so we can get the architecture right. But in addition to that, Professor Lessig said very openly to David and I when we first had breakfast with him almost a year ago in San Francisco, he said that he would be willing to help us raise money to move into this area with the community that he works with. So we know that there are foundations, we know that there are individuals that share Pacifica's philosophy and have a desire for a civic media that are willing to work with us. And we know we have to have those resources if we can move in this direction. So we do want the board to understand that we realize that there are going to be financial requirements and we believe that there are partners out there that are willing to work with us.
And that brings us to a modest proposal. And this is something that's, you know, open for discussion. We can have other things discussed, but the idea would be to work with the management to establish targets for online listener growth in 2007. I throw a number out there of 200,000 because it's about the cum of our major stations. And if you were actively promoting your online offerings, I think you could get to 200,000 very quickly. As soon as you get to audience sizes of that significance, when you offer people the opportunity to be online, it is not perceived, if you're actively using your FM, too, to advertise it, it's not perceived as, you know, a diss, right? It's a huge opportunity.
Dave, is this proposal in writing for us?
It's in writing right there. I can email
that's
it.
That's it.
You can email it.
The as part of it, and this is to build that space, you could request that any new regular programming be previewed online. Before you get on the air, as part of the review process, you produce online for a little while. You, in order to make that space not seem a less than space, you take your best programmers and you ask them create additional content for online distribution. Didon Kamathi, who does Freedom Now in Los Angeles, was talking to me. He's saying, you mean I could take the whole speeches that I have to cut down to fit my time slot and just put it all up there and tell people to go get it? And I said, yeah, you could. So you ask people like Margaret, people, anybody who's on the air who's got more good stuff than they can get out there to put it up there and tell their listeners, you can go here and get it. You build audience that way. You you actively solicit new producers on the air. You say, we want to find people who are going to do health programming, science programming, spirituality programming, public affairs programming, arts programming. And you actively solicit them to develop things online, and you start doing, you actively offer to webcast, as KPFK has done on a number of occasions, live events in your signal area. You keep promoting everything in your community because you need, in this world, when people can get content from anywhere, to build loyalty in your community to your institution. Your institution is the one that they're going to support because you're out in the community, because you're visible. And you use the FM transmitters repeatedly and constantly to build audience online. Now, one thing I want to close, and then I'm going to turn it over to Pete, because Pete has built us a website that has a lot of the infrastructure that allows this. It also has some philosophical assumptions implicit in it that Pete needs to describe. But Ken Friedman said, a lot of people in our institution were nervous about the idea that we'd be competing with ourselves, that if we did this, we would erode the audience for FM. He said, the experience is not that. The experience is we actually increase the audience, if I'm right. We increase the group of people who want to listen to FMU. But more to the point, he said, if we don't compete with ourselves, somebody else will. So in the competition with our FM offering, I want our online offering to outcompete anybody else's online offering for our FMU listeners. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete, and thank you for listening.
And we thank all the members of our task force that are spending even more time on the telephone with us.
We don't care.
I don't know where to stand. I don't want to have my back to anybody. It's
you like Miles Davis, Pete.
All right.
Pace.
I'm going to sit here. Pardon me, folks. I just wanted to go over a few items that were mentioned. Is this okay?
Louder.
The first thing is, how many of you folks are somewhat familiar with YouTube, MySpace, Wikipedia even? Okay.
Somewhat
familiar.
Somewhat.
Now, that I'm very encouraged by that. I mean, to think about why someone would give WFMU $400,000 to create a podcast-safe archive, That's very profound. You have to understand there's a very big significance to this. Why is a podcast safe archive necessary? Right? That's really one of the things we have to realize, because there's millions of people that are taking advantage of this new distribution method. And for some time, people were doing it kind of breaking some rules, and, you know, there's been a Wild West feeling on the internet for some time, for the first few years. It's cleaning up as of the last few years. Rob mentioned Napster. Napster came and went. MySpace and YouTube can potentially come and go as well. MySpace was recently purchased by Fox. YouTube was recently purchased by Google. Both of these organizations are not interested in letting copywritten material be distributed. Google is 95% copywritten material. YouTube. So when Google finishes this takeover and then goes through the content and cleans it up, you're going to see huge holes on the web. These millions of people that went to Napster, they found other places afterwards. In a year from now, the people that have been going to YouTube and been going to MySpace, they may need another place to go, because these are sites full of copyrighted material. And what I'm suggesting is these new owners are going to clean it up. On the same side of the coin here, in terms of doing things kind of a little, you know, we are also testing podcasting and distribution as well. We, as a network, need to look at how we are doing that in terms of, you know, liability issues. So in this context of the Wild West Internet, we have to acknowledge that that's coming to a halt. And going forward, if we're going to take advantage of these new distribution methods, we have to start doing things correctly. Part of doing things correctly in terms of distribution is embracing part of it. It doesn't have to be the only way. One good way would be along these lines. What I see here, if we can leverage this distribution method and take advantage of our online sites, I don't just say Pacifica.org. All of our sites should be up to par to do the same thing. We can have 12 to 24 months from now a progressive version of Wikipedia, where you can go and find your text and your audio segments that match that, and not just from one source or from one station, but from all our producers. And think about what impact that could have. While the MySpaces and the YouTubes and the Napsters go because of their issues, if we resolve these issues and position ourselves 12 to 24 months from now, we can have a big impact here. So, there was a screen also. Okay, I'll go into the site when I do my presentation in a couple of hours and go into more detail, but just, you know, that was, it's ready to go in terms of distributing our content by topics, whatever our topics may be. And so we need to get this part of the deal ready so we can start distributing legally. The last thing I want to say is there was a slide that said lessons learned from new media, and the examples were, again, YouTube and MySpace, and Napster's a good example. I think the example we really want to look at is Linux. It's not a website per se, but the Linux versus Microsoft is the example. How many of you folks use Microsoft? I admit. So, you see, the reality is Microsoft had to be sued by the U.S. so they can stop their practices, and still they continue to, you know, their aggressive stance. Linux came out of nowhere and now has publicly traded companies that are distributing Linux. There are dozens of other companies that have very specific Linux varieties for this or that.
Red Hat Linux, their stock price has gone up 85% in the last 4 years. I know, because I bought 20 shares of it. I also bought 20 shares of Microsoft in my IRA a number of years ago. That has lost money. It lost 50% of its value, just so you know.
The significance of Linux is that, Mac has Microsoft's problem with less market share, which only compounds it. Linux has been successful because of this model, because they put their code out and said, you take it. If you have an idea to make a variation that's very specific for this need, go for it. If you've got another idea and rewrite the code, distribute it. So now you have all these varieties, all these flavors based on this one original concept that is competing with Microsoft, which is the 800-pound gorilla. You know, they are the monopoly of monopolies. This is a parallel with us and mainstream media. Okay, if we can distribute our content to the progressive masses that really want it, and say, do what you want with it, or, you know, all these rights you want to apply to it, and let other people pass it on, just like Linux has in the last 5 years, we could have incredible growth compared to mainstream media or corporate media. Okay, because corporate media is not looking the way we could be looking at this. This is an advantage we have. This is a window of opportunity we have because of the changing climate on the web and whatnot. And I all I can say is I strongly encourage, if the board can do one thing, to move on this as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on that, because before we can use our online offerings in ways that can grow exponentially, we have to solve this problem. And I just wanted to recognize Dan quickly to talk about his opinion on the legal side of what the exposures, the difficulties and the possible solutions and the prospects are.
Okay. Thanks for that surprise.
Or just say whatever you feel like saying, Dan.
All right. So it's always great to be surprised like this. I'm not seeing a huge number of problems, okay? I'm seeing technical issues that we need to resolve. Clearly, with the content that already belongs to Pacifica, there is no obstacle to loading it up and distributing it. So all of the material that Pacifica owns, which means all of the material that Pacifica creates with its paid staff, can be made immediately available with very few problems. The issue that we are grappling with on the committee from a legal point of view, and it's important to understand we're talking about a two-step process. The initial step for our unpaid producers is to create a fair, negotiable, flexible agreement with them that allows them to comfortably allow Pacifica to use their content in the same way that we are able currently to use the content that we already own. So what's evolving in this license that we're talking about is a negotiable process that allows us to agree with our unpaid producers, first of all, as to the identity of the content we're talking about, whether it's one show, whether it's their whole series of shows, whether it's a segment, whatever it is, to identify that, and then from there to allow, kind of on a checkbox method, the creation of an agreement which says to Pacifica, you can distribute this to all the affiliates, you can distribute it to all non-commercial radio stations, you can post it on your net site, you can post it anywhere, you can make it available through the various types of commercial commons licenses that Rob and Dave were talking about earlier. It's a little bit sensitive because I think a lot of the producers and developers are worried about whether they're giving away something that may be valuable to them. So one challenge for us is to overcome that caution. I think the members of the committee are really, and Greg as well, are committed to being very fair about this. We're not trying to take advantage of anyone. We're simply trying to work out an agreement which is mutually agreeable. For the commercial distribution, again, we give the producers the option to choose or not choose commercial distribution in addition to the non-commercial distribution, and then where commercial distribution is agreed upon, what the terms are. So that we would say, well, if there's any profit to be made from our distribution, commercially of your content, it will be split 50-50, 70-30, 30-70, whatever it is, and with also a proviso that incidental low-cost commercial distribution by the producers of their own work is something that would not belong to Pacifica, which clearly our understanding is that producers distribute CDs or other kind of low-volume forms of distribution of their own content. That would be theirs, and we're not seeking to claim any interest in it. So I think, as people said earlier, within another meeting or two, we should be able to have this agreement worked out and to start using it with our volunteer producers. But again, there's no obstacle at all at this point to uploading the material that we already own for the kind of distribution that people are talking about.
Okay, so the next thing is, what we're really talking about in this whole era is something that ends up as a fundamental shift culturally within a radio station, and that's something Ked Friedman has talked about. So I was hoping to turn it over to the managers for a couple minutes and talk about their thoughts, feelings, interests, particularly any reactions that they might have to this. Ron, Eva, Lemlem are here, or Dwayne, and I've never met Mr. Adams. Is he here?
Yeah.
Robert Scott Adams. So whoever would like to speak, if you'd like, if you don't want to say anything right now, no need to. But Ron, did you want to talk about it a little bit, if you could get on one of the mics? And then we're going to throw it open to the board.
Well, in listening to this, it sounds like... it sounds like a great idea. My concern or question, it's not a concern, a question, is the logistics of managing the individual distribution of the various programmers. You know, you have 50 or more programmers, you know, associated with a station, for example. Each of these programmers will be making individualized agreements to distribute their content. And I'm concerned about the logistics of managing and monitoring those agreements to make sure that everybody is adhering to them. They're certainly going to be, with an opportunity like this, they're certainly going to go out and try to distribute their material, you know, to other networks or other entities. So I'm just concerned about the logistics of managing. Who will be responsible for managing, you know, those agreements and monitoring those agreements? Will it be the station management? Will it be Pacifica Network itself? And if someone can give me some shed some light on that, I would appreciate it.
Basically, that's one of the things. That's one of the technical issues that are really going to have to get worked out. As Dan said, it's not so much the legal barrier as the technical barrier, the issue of these releases and the rest. And if you could find the time to participate in the licensing and distribution task force, that would help. But we recognize that that's an issue and that it's going to have to be resolved, and not resolved by, a 50-50 vote plus one, but actually by consensus, because everybody's going to have to be on board with this to make it work. So all I can say is we're really aware of that. But one of the things is that WFMU has been Ken Friedman, who has done all this at his station, has made himself available to us to help us with how this stuff gets managed. And maybe one of the things that would be really useful is to convene a call with him and the other managers, since you guys face similar challenges, and he can talk to you about how he's dealt with each of these areas. Did Eva or Lemlem want to? Oh, Rob, go ahead.
Well, I one way to think about this, we haven't got the administration of this step by step, but think of the audio port, which we have now. What we're thinking would be, we would have something that would be similar to the audio port. The programs that would be there would have embedded in the program a Community Commons license that indicated what are the terms for non-commercial use, what are the terms for commercial use. And then prior to that, what we would be doing is we would be placing these agreements, I would imagine, on the Internet and letting the producers network-wide understand what this is about. So a lot of what this is going to require is communication, and a lot of it's going to involve collaboration of the same type that we have now when we put things on AudioPort, when we do a network broadcast that a number of stations are involved in. But yeah, we're going to have to write procedures, and people will have to do some different things than they're doing now, but not everyone. Obviously, every producer that wants their show to be accessible on this is going to have to look at the agreement and determine what they want to do. But that's really where it begins, is with the producer. It puts the power in their hands. That's all I'd like to say.
Go ahead, Ron. Oh, Lemlem?
Just to follow up. Let's say you have a show that wants to distribute this material to a number of different sources, commercial and non-commercial. The agreements that will be made with, let's say, commercial distribution that will involve potential advertisers, because we're talking about commercial networks. How do we deal with, what's the plan to deal with, who negotiates those agreements? Will the stations be, will the network be involved in those negotiations?
I can answer.
Okay, and also, the difference between music content and public affairs content. So, you know, what are those, you know, how are those issues to be resolved?
Well, it's really clear that they're in a different category because music programmers are predominantly using copyrighted content where public affairs are predominantly not. So they're clearly going to be in different categories. One thing FMU has done is they've negotiated with major record labels and gotten the right to distribute that their radio programs of their content directly. In terms of who negotiates it and the terms, that is something that we get to control and define. And I imagine that, you know, dealing with the non-commercial portion first so we can get the distribution up and running seems to be the most efficient way while we work out within ourselves issues like that. And some stuff you might want the GM to negotiate, and some stuff you might want council to negotiate, and some stuff you might want the ED to negotiate. You might want to have a uniform or a non-uniform policy, but all that stuff is designable and flexible right now. So hopefully, as we go through this step by step, people can weigh in with what they think would work. Yes, Rob.
Go ahead. Let Dan speak first.
Well, just, you know, in a real specific response to the question, in the hypotheticals you pose, the producer has the choice. Okay, so let's say he or she wants to allow Pacifica to distribute the program non-commercially. So he checks off the box that says Pacifica is licensed to distribute my program non-commercially. Furthermore, this is not an exclusive license. So I can take my show and give it to another network or to whomever I choose for non-commercial use. So it makes it very easy, it seems to me, unless the person just decides he doesn't want his work distributed. But he can give Pacifica a commercial license, a non-commercial license, an exclusive or a non-exclusive, and so maintain whatever options he wants.
And I made a mistake. What I was talking about is if Pacifica chooses to distribute it to a commercial broadcaster, but if the programmer wants to go and give it to a commercial broadcaster, they're free to do so. That's yes. Up to them. They can go do that if they want. Now, at a later date, if somebody's doing that in ways that the station feels is harmful to its reputation or something like that, then the station would talk to the programmer about the terms of it. But we are recognizing that the programmers have the right to do that, and again, that goes back to the idea that talented people are going to want the freedom to use their content in the way that they see fit. And as long as it doesn't do violence to Pacifica's ethics, we're cool. At the point at which it does, a discussion takes place. But the need to legislate everything ahead of time probably leads you into an area that's unnecessarily restrictive because the odds are the cases are not going to be that great. And when they arise, we think we can deal with them. Lemlin? And by the way, we're going to leave some of these questions are going to be things that obviously are going to be worked out. We're not at the end of the process. What we're trying to get is buy-in from the board on the basic principle and hear from people what are the concerns that we need to address when we get to the agreement. Lemlin.
I'm not entirely sure what you mean by distribution, and I don't know
how. Excuse me, Lem, this is a cell phone going off. Okay.
I'm not sure what you mean by distribution, and I'm not sure how this is different from what we currently do. We stream, we podcast, we archive our programming. Mm-hmm. That's one question. The second question is I'm not entirely clear how unpaid producers who use station resources to produce their programs and other resources that are copyrighted are considered owners of their programs.
Okay. 2 points. One, what's different about it is that if some other listener wanted to download one of your podcasts and put it up on their website and distribute it to their friends, or put it on MySpace, or put it anywhere else, or make it, or sample it and make a rap song out of it, out of samples from it, or anything they wanted to do with it, they could. Right now, they have, even though they could technically do it right now, they don't actually have permission to do it right now. And 10 years from now, it would be very unclear to them whether they could or couldn't do it. So that's the main difference. It allows the content to flow out beyond the borders of just those people who get it from your site. The other thing is based on the... They do that, but they're not licensed to do it. And in fact, they could be violating all kinds of copyrights. They don't. We don't know, and the uncertainty in the ability to use it, like with the archives, most of that stuff we can probably use, but the fact of the matter is we have uncertainty about whether you can use it. And if you're talking about somebody else choosing to use your content to build additional distribution, if they don't know they can use it and the terms under which they can use it, the likelihood that they will use your content to build additional distribution declines. So it's a matter of making it explicit what you're already implicitly saying, okay, go ahead and do. The other point goes to unpaid producers. And there the idea is, from a technical legal point, Pacifica could, if it chose to, want to assert ownership rights over content, co-ownership rights. The law, as I understand it, is that both people who contributed or both entities that contribute to something both hold copyright and all the privileges that go with it. But if you go back to the idea that we're in competition with producers and we want to reconceptualize ourselves as serving producers who are doing mission-driven programming, if you're telling a producer, I am not going to let you do things that you could do if you went to your house and bought a $200 microphone and an $80 mixer and plugged it into your computer and possibly used a Gentner somewhere, you could do all that stuff. I'm not going to let you do what everybody else in the whole world of podcasting gets to do. If you're broadcasting with me, you have diminished privileges. And what we want to do is say, no, being involved with us gives you enhanced privileges. And if somebody's going to go out there and use the Pacifica thing again, the content and the resources of Pacifica in a way that does violence to the mission, we may at that point want to do something about it. But the idea is to get away from the capture model and into the support model, because ultimately the principle is that people support Pacifica because it supports ethically driven programmers. And that is the main reason for it. Now, there may be problems that arise, but I don't, at the moment, think that they will be the largest part of what we get, of what happens. Yes, Lydia.
Yes, the way I envision this, and I'm assuming this is like some initial steps, that once you all have your first, those last two meetings that you're thinking about having, and fill in more of the gaps, because a lot of the things that you have left open are really the things that are going to hold people back from approving it, in my opinion. But at that point, I think we have to go through the same process we did with the programming policy, which was a painful one, but it was a very important one. Which means that you have to engage the LSVs, the staff, have staff meetings in each signal area, paid and unpaid, to get all of that input and to come up with all of the situations that may arise. My concern stems from the archives reality, which is, of course, that even with the paid staff that we have had over the years, that there has not been consistency over getting the necessary contracts and so forth. But, you know, there are other things that I'm not thinking of. But I think it would be very useful to go through a process like we did with the programming, where we were able to then at some point say, okay, we can resolve this. The vision, for example, I think is a no-brainer. I don't think anybody objects to that part. But anyway, that you can go through step by step and say and come to an agreement on the things you can agree on, but you're not going to agree on the whole package until you know it can actually work. It's overwhelming, I have got to say, from the perspective of someone that you're selling it to today, because of so much detail that is left out. And so I think that should be our approach the same way, and realize that it's going to take several months for us to get it underway, but I'm very optimistic that we will, but a lot too many unanswered questions still.
Okay, I just want to respond to that. We've talked about this on the licensing and distribution task force, and it's clear that you have to get very broad buy-in and do that process. But we have also, even folks who have said, you know, there are issues, have recognized the importance of alacrity right now, because when you do this and when you position yourself in this world as it's jumping off and growing exponentially is very important. And, for example, WFMU got funding to do a PodSafe archive. Other organizations are right now ready to start positioning themselves and will go and get the funding that is available. So when we get to the point where we have agreement on principle and can, in good faith, approach major funders and say, this is the direction we are going, right, and we can say that for sure, we can start soliciting funding and foundation grants and major donor grants to do this. Until on principle we can say, like if we can say, yes, we're developing a hybrid, a Creative Commons hybrid license in consultation with Dr. Lessig, and is it our intention to make it available. Again, we're not imposing this on anybody. Nobody is demanded to do it, right? But this is what we want to do and how we want to position ourselves. Then we can start getting fundraising. Then we can start building infrastructure while we work out the other issues. And so the hope would be that you get consent on those basic principles, i.e. the non-commercial portion of the license, right? We may have to talk a lot about how the commercial portion works. But in reality, in the near term, commercial uses of the licenses of the content outside of a stream we might assemble for satellite radio and the affiliates is probably not going to be a real major thing. So we can take time on that front while we work it out. Some of the biggest issues are going to be the ones Ron raised about administration within the station. And those are things, again, that if we have a commitment to move in those directions, we can solve while we get the funding and while we start building the infrastructure and assembling the team necessary to roll it out. But if all of that has to wait 6 months to a year to start, we are far behind most of the rest of this medium.
Well, but my point is I think you need to prioritize and deal with that, because if you were to take that vote today, even on principle, as much as I believe in this project, and you know that I do, I would say no, because I think it would be dishonest to go to funders without knowing whether you can actually do it. So some of the issues that Ron has, some of those concerns, make that a priority on these phone calls that you're having right now to resolve them before you bring it to this board for a vote, because it would be foolish to bring it to us without resolving some of those nuts and bolts things.
I understand. I just want to point out, in terms of feasibility, there is a radio station and a number of them that are already doing this. So the fact that it can work and does work, and the fact that it is possible in the environment of a community radio station, is already proved.
But
Chandra,
it's not
and then
proved
Ambrose.
To me, so.
Chandra,
I would
did you have your hand up? Go ahead, and then
weren't
Ambrose.
We're going to hear from the GM.
We'll
what about
did we
Eva
hear
charge?
From the GM?
Oh, Eva, you wanted to talk about it. Go ahead, Eva, and then I'll go to Chandra.
A couple of things. I'm really impressed with the extensive work that has been done on this.
Louder and come out front.
I certainly agree. You know, the TV puts on pounds. I'm not really committed to do that.
Only one camera.
We can strip it out.
Please do that.
That it does, man.
I definitely agree in principle. I'm not happy about what looks like, you know, an old boys club, which has not included some of the women. So can you please give attention to that?
Okay.
There's a few things. I think one of the issues that comes up is once you open this up and producers, we give the rights for them to own their content, there has to be clarity on how does this happen on the air, because we already sit with the challenge that you have programmers that use the airwaves to sell their products. Mm-hmm. And so then we get into the issue of payola and blackola.
Exactly.
So that is one of the big challenges. Another thing is when we look at fund drives, we use some of the content of in-house producers. So then what happens when you use a premium that is produced by, for instance, yourself, you know, during a fund drive? I know when you were producing some content, we would make an agreement to say, okay, don't sell this product prior to a fund drive. And so we had some of those agreements in place. And that's things to look at. We can't even get programmers now, maybe 5 programmers out of the 125 programmers at KPFK fill out speaker releases. So the practical aspects of this project is what really needs to be looked at and worked at, because there's a lot of kinks, as you know, you've already answered some of those. So those are just some of my initial comments. But I certainly want to be involved with this task group. Thank you so much.
So the agreement is definitely going to specify that Pacifica can use any of the content being licensed for fund drives. That's definitely going to be in there. The other point, one thing is that the Payola and Plugola, that is going to have to be monitored clearly in the online space as well. One thing, I guess one reaction I have is, it would be, I understand the cultural issues within the radio stations, but for example, if you wanted to very rapidly build online content with an online offering and use your FM to attract people to it, you could start off in that space by saying, we only are going to distribute stuff that meets the following criteria of your licensing it to us to use, which means you have to cross your T's and dot your I's in the same way that you demand of FM broadcasters that they announce the call letters. If they don't do that, they're off the air, because that's an FCC requirement. So I guess one of the things I was hoping to hear from the managers is an interest in using the stations as a vehicle for rapidly ramping up content production in the signal area for content offered online.
You know, Dave, we've been working on a project at KPFK, which we should be launching in the next few months, which is 10 different radio channels to solicit producers to produce content in various different areas. So it's part of what you're talking about. But even now, it's a really challenging issue to get programmers to promote KPFK versus, like, for instance, go to the website for Sojourner Truth. That's a reality, and those are the things that we're looking at. Because if we're talking about content distribution online, how are we promoting it on air, and at the same time stay in compliance and deal with the issues of, you know, how we distribute revenue? Mm-hmm. So those are just all the kinks that needs to be worked out. And then the other thing is we're doing audio archiving, and the challenge there is who's going to monitor if there's copyright infringement?
That's
a huge issue right now. I mean, KPFK has expanded tremendously with our audio archiving, but that's the concern, you know. So,
what we're doing on that, we're asking that our attorney talk with, in particular, the people at archive.org, which already archives vast amounts of copyrighted content and has dealt with a lot of these issues. Chandra, and then Ambrose, and then around the horn.
What about Mr. Adams?
Oh. Mr. Adams?
Okay.
Okay. We have to make a decision on time. Do people want to extend time in this discussion?
Yes. We haven't had any time to discuss anything.
Okay. I understand. We have to make a decision about where to withdraw time from. We can certainly withdraw some from lunch. May we withdraw some from the other thematic discussion?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Lem, you wanted to take Mr. Adams' question?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask what the CPB has to say about
it. CPB has no role, the FCC has no role in regulating online distribution. That's a good question. We can check on that.
It's coming up, Grace.
Pardon me? Were you going to say something? Yeah. Yeah, we haven't spoken with Krigler about the CPB impact of this stuff yet. Chandra.
Okay. Could people?
He said he didn't want to speak to it. Go ahead, Chandra.
Okay. Eva raised the issues that I am concerned about, but I didn't hear them addressed. Payola, Plugola, people talking about promoting their own websites on the air and, benefiting from them financially. Mm-hmm. And how do we, if we have these common license agreements, what do we do about people that have their own websites and promote their own content on their own websites?
We're absolutely allowing anybody to promote whatever they want. If you're talking about they're doing commercial activities in this area that we object to, the monitoring of it, we would have to decide what our policy was on it, and obviously if somebody violated that policy, we would no longer distribute their content.
But what I'm unclear about is they create a program, they air it on a Pacifica station, then they put it to their own website. They direct you to their website to go purchase it. So, you know, is it Pacifica content? Is it their content?
So
how does that work?
You're talking about something like alternative radio, where we air something and the person says at the end of the program, you can buy this. We've been doing that for a long time with alternative radio and other programs. Is what you're suggesting that other entities shouldn't have that privilege?
It's the same things that Eva raised, the same exact things. The programmers are on the air. They're on regularly. They have a health show. They have a program. They produce it on Thursday at 1 o'clock, okay? Then after the show's over, they say, go to my website to purchase this program or go to my archives and purchase prior shows. Mm-hmm. Produced for a Pacifica station, distributed on a Pacifica station, and then the benefit derives from people going to their own website to derive income from it. Okay. I mean, how does that relate to copyright? How does that relate to Pacifica licensing?
Well, so are you talking about the on-air stuff? Because the on-air stuff is already an issue that people are dealing with and trying to establish policies on. What we're talking about is the ability to distribute it by Pacifica online according to these terms.
Both. Because if they're distributing online on their site, how does that differ from Pacifica distributing it online on Pacifica? I mean, you know, which? How do you do that?
It's a non-exclusive.
How do you reconcile
a point of privilege or information or whatever? I'm not that cool with Robert's rules. On the time issue, okay. I think we need to have some agreement in terms of how long we will have this discussion. And I also think that many of us really want to speak because, you know, this is really crucial for us. So if we're going to have a back-and-forth response to each one, I think that's going to extend the time. So perhaps what we can do is to take a number of questions, and then all of the people involved in doing the presentations, the three or four people, could perhaps respond to them as a group. I mean, that's
right.
One suggestion to that we could actually get through it, and all of us will have the chance to raise our questions and concerns. If not, I'm afraid we're going to run out of time again. And
good point. Is there any objection to proceeding on that basis? Okay. Ambrose.
Did the task force discuss how we were going to aggressively establish an internet presence? We want to do it as Pacifica, as five stations, as Pacifica and five stations, or as specific programming presence. What did the task force discuss, and what did you conclude? And secondly, what about a blog? Did we talk about establishing a Pacifica blog? And in your discussions, did you talk about the attempted corporate takeover of the internet, which will substantially reduce its value?
Margaret.
Okay, a suggestion and then a couple of concerns. And I think this direction is really great. I think if there's one thing that we really work on this year, as the board, it really would be to get this thing going, because we are still stuck in the 20th century somewhere, mm-hmm. and we are way behind, and we have a lot of catching up to do. If not, we're going to become irrelevant very, very quickly. Having said that, to make one suggestion, bringing inner city and, you know, black and brown communities into this, one thing could be, for example, getting ISDN lines or whatever in communities. For example, in Kay, I'm proposing, I'm going to be lobbying very, very hard to get one in South LA, Community Coalition, get one on the east side. There are youth who have already been through a training at Kay, and other youth who are interested in radio, who could, within their own community, produce all kinds of content once they know what the perimeters are, you know, what not to say, etc. And that could immediately be material that we could start to put forward. At the same time, we're building that youth interest and that youth network that yesterday we talked about having to do anyway, and a way of involving particularly those youth who have very, very few access to resources, maybe can't go outside their house, you know, after school or whatever, but things that they can do. As a concrete suggestion, I'm ready to work on that right away next week. The youth are ready to roll, okay? But the other concern is that looking at our mission and the fact that we are listener-sponsored, we're non-commercial, we have been for a very, very long time, and we're talking about moving into a kind of a semi-commercial paradigm here. And, you know, and one thing that I'm concerned about is that the kind of a certain kind of careerism and corruption that has kind of crept into our various movements over the years, kind of creeping into Pacifica in terms of people using Pacifica then as a base to use Pacifica's resources to then go out and sell their stuff, God knows where, to whom. And what does that have to do with the mission of Pacifica? So I could see the non-commercial aspect of it, but when we get into that, I'm not quite sure how that works. And you know what I'm saying? So I agree with some of the concerns that people have raised around that.
Who's next? Well, we're just going around. AC.
First of all, I'd like to subscribe to what Prescott had just finished explaining, and that was one of my concerns. Is this is a highly technical process that's being introduced here today. The question is, out of the 300 million population in the United States, you have approximately 40% or more of that population that are not computer savvy. So how does that fit into this whole strategy that you have? I do think the program it certainly appears to be a wonderful one, and I think it should be approached. But I think parallel to this program is how do you reach those listeners to make it comport with the basic charter of this organization to reach out to different people and different socioeconomic people in terms of the structure of their existence. How do you do that? And I think that should be something that you address simultaneously with the notion of promoting this what seems to be a very, very wonderful new invention that you're coming up with. So
thank you. Sandra.
I think we need to move on this as soon as possible.
Thank you. Lisa.
What I'd like to say is that I believe Pacifica is moving on all fronts. We're presently engaged in trying to acquire new frequencies to reach those people who rely on broadcast because the common radio is still the most ubiquitous medium. We're already doing that. However, when 85% of the public has access to broadband and so many people are using the Internet, we shouldn't ignore this as a distribution mechanism. The thing is that the part about commercialism is that this is the stumbling block that the individual producers have proposed, is that they are afraid to distribute their programming in a non-commercial sense because so many programmers at these stations think that they're going to be the next big thing. And they're afraid to let their programming out because they say, well, no, I need to get paid for my program if it's distributed. Okay, so I don't think it's Pacifica looking at a commercial model. I think that we're reacting in response to those programmers who somehow think that they're going to be the next Michael Moore and make a $1 million off of their non-commercial documentary. Okay, but the reality is we need to get messages out to the rest of the community in this country. And the only way we're going to widely distribute the work that we're already doing on broadcast is to move forward into the electronic mediums that we have available. So I really encourage that we go forward with this planning because I know that with all the intelligent minds at work on this program, we're going to resolve these issues, and we need to be in the forefront of this distribution.
I'd like to first of all thank everybody for the tremendous amount of work and research that they've already done on this. I know with working with the programming and the technology committee that this comes up a lot. I think one of the things, and if it's not already in the process, I think we need to begin to, like the concerns that people have because they're going to come up again and again and again, And part of the thing is to try to get as much clarity and make sure everybody's on the same page. So we maybe begin to need to develop like an outline or something with the concerns and some of the questions answered that people legitimately have. And I also think that, and this is one of the issues with working with technology, especially new technologies, it sounds so vast. And so we can get into the idea, oh, it's so nice, but we need sometimes some linear concrete measures in terms of what is the next step. So even with this, I would like to see something like this, assuming we resolve all the things everybody brought out, we're all in 1,000,000% agreement, then what is the next thing that we would have to do? What's the next thing that this board has to do? I hear people talk about funds and bandwidth. Some of that is alien to us, so we really need to have like a step, you know, outline a process. This step first, then this, then this, then this, and, you know, develop a frequently asked questions thing or whatever, talk about the issues, have them down there, and I think that would be one way, and get kind of like a guide or whatever, but I think that's important, have something outlined. What do we need to do to make this happen?
Thank you.
I agree with much that's been said and as to the concerns and the details and the questions that have not been answered. I mean, I love technology, so it's easy for me to get, oh, wow, and get all carried away with any kind of technology. But there are, and since I'm on this task force, I really, there's an overwhelming number of issues that it's very hard for us even to think of them all. So there's, you know. I think one thing that I'd like to point out, the analogy keeps being made between this and something like Linux or open source software. I don't think that's a comparison at all, because software is something everybody who's interested in it needs it. They either need that one or another one, but it's a tool for them that they have to have. We're talking about radio or audio or whatever you want to, you know, as entertainment. Nobody needs to go have a podcast. Their livelihood doesn't depend on it in most cases, and so that's not a good analogy, how quickly and exponentially that took off and how successful Linux is. It doesn't tell us anything about how a totally discretionary piece of, you know, entertainment would work at all. And I'm a little concerned about that, because that's been a heavy piece of the rationale for it. And I'd like to just go away from that and see and develop more cogent arguments that have nothing to do with software. They're just not comparable.
Bob?
Well, first I want to appreciate the leadership of Dave and Rob and Pete in focusing our attention on this really critical area that we know from Lonnie's presentation yesterday about flat listenership and flat sponsorship that we can't go on with the current model. We have to stay with the emerging technology. So this is very exciting, and you know, we've got to get into it. On the issue of the role of the unpaid staff and the positions that people have taken on the use of their work, and it is their work, and in fact, increasingly, for those who don't know, more and more producers are 100% doing their work at home with their own equipment, and all they do is, you know, deliver some piece of a material to the station to broadcast. But in any case, I think there's a misconception about the motivation behind those unpaid staff at BAI, and also Mary and Bonnie Simmons from KPFA have raised some very valuable points on these calls. And that is, it's not about making a lot of money. In fact, it's completely absurd that anyone from Pacifica is ever going to make a lot of money off of distributing some, you know, recordings of programs that they've done, because that's the very nature of the alternative content that we produce. But it's simply that people who in many cases have spent years of their lives dedicated to working for Pacifica without ever getting paid, and not that anyone has ever asked to be paid, but often shelling out hundreds of dollars of their own pocket every year to buy the equipment and the tapes and the whatever to allow the show to go on, to say, if I can make a little bit of recompense for all that I've given over the years, by distributing, you know, a little bit through some other channels on the internet, I would like to, I have the legal right to do that, and I would like Pacifica not to obstruct me in trying to do that. And it's not a lot of producers who have the time and energy to do that in the first place, and those who do are not trying to get rich. They're simply trying to exercise a right that, you know, I think is very reasonable. So I don't think we should look on this as much as I hear what Margaret was saying. This is not about a commercial mentality. This is about very, very meager compensation for work people have often done for many, many years with no pay.
Before we go on, I've had a note that many of the people, the listeners, have been waiting for listener comment. Mm-hmm. Is there any objection by the board to entertaining comment from those listeners who would like to leave now? And if the others would be willing to wait till we finish, that would be okay.
No,
but can we do that now?
Yeah. No,
is there any? Are there any of the people in the audience who have been waiting and would like to leave and so would like to make their comments now? Hang on, I'm going to go down the list. Teresa, Akua, Mike, Scotty, Ken. Go ahead, Ken. Go ahead. The men of the people.
Dave?
Yes.
I'm willing to wait, but don't take me off the list.
I'll put you on the list. How's that?
Yeah, but I only need to go now, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Good afternoon. yesterday, I spoke on behalf of several LSB members here locally who requested that the seating arrangement of the TMB members be delayed until an investigation could be done. Apparently, I struck a raw nerve because I was followed by slanderous comments by Teresa Allen, which I now repudiate every word of and request that she produce the email she referred to. I also spoke on behalf of several people, or you've heard from several people, who contest the certifiability of KPFT's LSB elections. Today I'd like to speak on behalf of several members of KPFA that could not make the trip out here today, including Steve Zeltzer, Nancy Kyler, Reva Antin, past LSB member there, and Maxine Dugan. These people issued a report, an initial response to Pacifica elections violations in response to the National Election Supervisor and KPFA Local Election Supervisor. It's reports. I'm going to read just a few excerpts here. The preliminary report by National Elections Officer Les Radke and KPFA and KPFT election supervisors failed to provide an accounting of all complaints in the election and of how each one of these complaints was handled. Whether these complaints were rectified or rejected, it is incumbent on the election officers to provide their response to specific complaints. This they have failed to do. Secondly, National Election Supervisor Les Radke refused to provide a written report at the last Walnut Creek PNB meeting of what was expected and required and what was being done by the management and staff at each station to make sure there was a proper election. Radke publicly told Pacifica members that if he did this, the managers would refuse to show any cooperation whatsoever with the election rules. This method of operation by Radke prevented a proper accounting of what was required and what was actually done in the various signal areas. Now, they mentioned several specific violations here of some very serious issues, including the fact that a press conference was required in order to play the carts that were supposed to be played with the election, with the campaign statements on them. Steve Zeltzer himself was prevented from running at all as a candidate.
And that's been 2 minutes. I'm going to give you one more since you're bringing things from other people.
Well, okay. I'll try to make this brief. I've got a copy of the report here, and any board member that would like to look at this before you hear from Mr. Radke this afternoon and his little whitewash statement, you should take a look at the complaints that are detailed by KPFA activists, and you also already have the ones from the KPFT activists. These elections were not run fairly. They were totally corrupt, and this is the fuel on which Pacifica works, is elections. And if the elections are tainted by corruption, then Pacifica is tainted by corruption. There's no getting around the fact. You've got the rest of the weekend to look at this, but if you don't look at it, what else is going to happen? People will appeal to higher authorities. You've got to take care of this. This is your responsibility as board members. Otherwise, the Florida Republicans got nothing on you guys.
I just want to make a comment to board members and the public. It's the right of anybody in public comment to say what they want and what they think. And on our air, you know, we allow people to say things that other people consider absolutely outrageous, and it comes out in the wash, you know. So I'd like it if everybody could respect each other's statements. Having said that, we obviously don't want to encourage personally abusive language. Do the remaining people, Serene, Carolyn, Deb, or Emmett, want to speak now? Or are you happy to speak after this conversation? Thank you. Yes?
Can you clarify what the sequence will be? If I understand it, you're going to finish this discussion, then you're going to have lunch, then you're going to have public comment?
No, we're going to finish this, have public comment, and then have a 10-minute break. Okay.
Can I just had one more sentence.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to really draw board members' attention to the process we've gone through on this task force and the value of having all the players at one table in the discussion. Part of, you know, why it was frustrating before when we were in the committee, or when I wasn't in the committee, but other board members were on the programming committee discussing it, was you didn't have all the people who, as Dave said, you know, either have to implement this if they're managers, or have to accept the terms being offered if they're producers. And that's what this task force has done, and I think that's a really good model to follow on a lot of other business we have to do.
It's been a very positive experience.
Well, I find this to be one of the most exciting things that we talk about since I've been a part of this group and a part of the LSD, because it is absolutely something that we have to, with all earnest and post-haste, get involved in. When young people, you know, start out, they're using computers. They are all plugged into MySpace. They are all plugged into those kinds of things. And if we hope to get their attention, we have to do the same thing. And we have to get our butts in gear and whatever the obstacles, work through it. And we have an incredible group working on this to have brought all of this information together. And my hope is that we don't get bogged down in what we can't do and how, you know, what the obstacles are, but work on how we can do it and move forward, because it is quite phenomenal, and we can either slow down and, you know, find out where we are or get moving and get some folks in here and get our young people involved. This is the way to do it.
Thank you. Laurie, did you have a comment?
I'd just like to say that at WJB, we have been offering audio files online for the past month, and we chose the audio files that were Ojibwe language-based, and we have 4 interviews currently online. We just looked at our online hits recently, and they've doubled in the past month. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it's quite a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thomas?
I apologize for having this hood on, man. I just love this deep south. Y'all believe in air conditioning. You know, it's cool, man. But, you know, with regard to this proposal, I think, as I've heard from several of the members of the board, it's truly impressive. It's very impressive. And I can't imagine that any of the board members would object to it in terms of the proposal being something that Pacific would ultimately adopt. And to the degree that people have pointed out problems, I would hope that we could work them out. But one thing that I'm more concerned about is whether we will, in earnest, try to work these problems out as quickly as possible. I'm not saying that the people making the proposal haven't anticipated problems and thought about how to work them out. What I'm really saying is that when Ron Pinchback brought up the question, how would this be presented on the Internet? Would it be a Pacifica vehicle? Would it be a vehicle from each station? That was a very, very, very good question. But the thing that's and you know what, and Ambrose said that? I apologize, Ambrose. Well, to the degree that Ron Pinchback got credit for Ambrose's comment, that was a very, 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 very good point, Ambrose. Very, very good point. And Dr. Bethune has said that, oh, I definitely must be a lawyer. She should have known from the outset. But you know something? My point, my concern is that in Pacifica, at least from my vantage point, it seems like we don't have in earnest a desire to adequately manage projects. I think that's a problem with regard to the 5 stations and the network itself. To the degree we have this concept and this worration in our mind about whether the five stations make up a network or whether the network is broken up into five independent or largely autonomous stations and that can't be coalesced. That to me reflects a problem with this. Not that it's not a good idea and it should not be done, but all the questions that have been raised about the independent programmers, I'm not really worried about that. The programmers, as you said, Dave, who would agree to the terms that we lay out, those would be the ones we deal with. If it's five or if it's 500, that's the ones we would deal with. Moreover, if it's, let's say there are 1,000 programmers within Pacifica, then if it's not, I think what you said about encouraging others outside of the network to participate is fruitful. But will we truly try to manage it in a fashion that would be fair? And so I think that we can do it, but I'm wondering about whether, I'm concerned that in the proposal you didn't outline the management structure. That's needed. If you outline the management structure instead of saying these are the issues that the management structure and the board have to resolve, then you really just, like you put food on the table and say it's too far away from us to get to.
Thank you. Lonnie.
Well, the way I look at it is what problems will be addressed if we move forward in the proposal. That's how I sort out, because there's five or six different proposals here. It's a lot in there. So I tend to eliminate some of the confusion by saying, okay, what are the outcomes that we would be shooting for? And here's what I came up with. We say we want to increase our listenership. Will these proposals move us toward that goal? Yes. Likely they will, despite problems. Will the proposals increase our ability to address youth? Yeah. Likely. I can see that working. Will the proposal give us distribution channels that will follow our listeners, and especially young people, that are using those distribution channels? Yes. Likely it will, properly managed. Good point. The internal structure issues around programmers, copyrights, waivers, yes, that's a problem. Not an immediate solution. But you have to take this stuff and disassemble it and say, what can we move on that's a no-brainer, that makes sense to do, that we can control? So here's the last part. There are internal structure issues, management issues, and there are legal issues. Sure, they are, and they're sticky. And then there's the 24/7 barrier. We've said for many years that we need to break the 24/7 barrier. Well, moving to the internet is breaking the 24/7 barrier. That's a no-brainer. We get 20 new shows on the internet. We have created a new sixth channel, a new distribution network, a new content source. Because who will provide the content for those 20 new internet channels? Yeah, a lot of people will provide that content. And that's exciting. That's the way that Pacifica can grow. So, to make a long story short, we need to take apart what's being presented to us, be clear on what we can and should move on as quickly as possible, and not, because we'll get bogged down in this five or six different things. So I say we disassemble it, say we can move on youth strategy. We can move on the internet. We can move on the parts that deal with distribution. Let's do that. The parts that are more difficult, internal structure, legal issues, programmers, we need to go take the temperature of those issues, come back and say, this is how long it'll take and what it will involve. That way we have a structure. Anyway, that's what I think. That's how it makes sense to me when I disassemble.
Thank you. Bertolt.
I support the whole initiative. There are a lot of issues that are being raised. I think we should do a laundry list and set up deadlines and things that are important to tackle and move on. There's no question that this has to be done, otherwise we're going to be a dinosaur. So I don't even think that's an issue. Hopefully that you will resolve the unpaid staff situation. And once that's resolved, we should move on right away to pass a resolution to go full-fledged doing this. I think I'm going to say something that as a financial person, I am totally against, is we should go full-fledged, do a budget, projection for this project, and worry about how we're going to get the money afterwards. Start doing whatever it takes to raise money to support it. You know, in other words, put ourselves in a situation where we are forced to go out there and raise money to push this forward. You know, because it has to be done.
Lauren?
The project is totally fascinating, and I'm sorry. Yeah, the project is totally fascinating. But what I find is that when we first talked or listened to Dr. Lessig when we were in New York, you know, that's been like I'm not sure how many months ago or a year.
That was March.
March, but that.
Yeah. It was in May.
It was in May.
It was the June
but
last June.
Year.
Go
last
June
year.
Meeting
wow.
In
it was June. It was actually June.
But there was a meeting and Dr. Lessig spoke there, and that even before then we've talked about this. We know that this is coming. So I would suggest that we put something into gear so that we at least get some little part done, trial beta, and so that we'll have something that we can see is. That how it will work, that Pacifica will have some presence, and then plan the bigger move and what we have to do. Because it's you know, again, it's just, you know, we continue to talk about this. We really need to move.
That very directly.
Thank you.
Mike.
Pilot project.
Yeah. Okay. I'm dazzled, you know. It's amazing. And that's sort of what I like about Pacifica is everybody gets really so complicated like Dave does that I just remain dazzled or something. It's pretty brilliant. And they didn't know it. I'm kind of a minion. I'm kind of with the L.A. Sound Posse or the Houston Sound Posse or something, so I have some experience. And I want to be on the technology committee to work on this. So I'm for it. I don't know. I don't want to say much. I'll try to just outline this. People are tired and hungry. The process itself, I think, like, I don't know what belongs to management and why the board is being democratic or proactive with this, you know, so the whole thing, you know, which I hate, just go with it is my general attitude, but there should be some infrastructure, again, process, so that we know where we are. The litigious stuff seems like we're hoarding something that we pretend like everybody needs to hear. And to me, that's really a kind of psychological problem, maybe, for the network. And I appreciate the legal effort to get that, you know, taken care of under the spirit of get it out, you know. Get the material out of the archives as well as the stuff that is going out on the air now. And all the stuff that I produce, I sign over to Pacifica, you know. Okay. The on the ground stuff, I have gone into community centers like SHAPE here in Houston, and I've actually bought the computers to do this kind of thing, you know, to program from the community centers, and I could tell you about that. So, you know, you can be dazzled and, like, see all the potential, but I can tell you what it's like to try to get programming on the ground, and it ain't like they're going to line up. A lot of them, I mean, you have to teach them audio, sound programming, you know. You have to teach them how to use audio editing, and then you got to get them to do it. And you know, it's not like, you're not going to convince me that everybody, all the kids are out there doing it right now. You know, I can find you musicians who are doing it, but, you know, are they into bling bling or whatever? You know, I mean, like, are they doing Pacifica stuff? Do we, you know, like, that's another thing. And then the last part of my outline is this really seems like it's liberating us, but it's not grandiose to me. I don't think, you know, that this room you got to separate the big plan from the reality that we're all just living our lives and trying to create better worlds. And maybe the audience is not as big as we think it is.
Wendy.
Pacifica used to market itself as radio with vision. And it hasn't been real visionary. I mean, individual programmers might be visionary, but there hasn't been a lot of vision happening in a formal way, and I just like everyone to recognize that there's a vision happening here right now, and it's not even our vision. Dave didn't think of this all by himself. It's already being done. And so, you know, and I'd also like to say that we've had the same kind of discussion when Democracy Now! Talked about going to television. You know, everybody was, oh, you know, it went on and on how many obstacles that came from people just like us. And, you know, once they did that, and try, and they, Democracy Now! Does all these things we're talking about right now. And that's why they've gotten so popular. And I would just like to say that I really hope that this board is not going to throw obstacles into. You've got a lot of really smart, passionate people working on this project. They're not going to give away the store. They are taking into account the programmers. They're trying to get the programmers' programs heard all over the world and copied and exponentially multiplied. So I just would like to ask the board not to make, you know, think about what the legacy of this group of PMB members is going to be. Could be one of vision instead of squinting.
Yeah, well, I'd like to join in the compliments to the crew that is working on this across the board. I mean, it is not something new to us. We've been talking about it a lot, and that June meeting in New York with the good doctor there was a breakthrough. But I think this is a major, major breakthrough in a project that many of us have seen as visionary and important. I want to address, because I think what we're doing is we're putting out some questions that people can address. I want to talk for a moment about the role of the archives in this, and maybe later hear from Brian and others. The, you know, no one, everyone here is aware that the archives are over 55 years of a, really, the voices and music of American history of the last 55 years. It's a trite even to call it a treasure. I know there are huge issues around copyrights, ownerships, licensing, even the Martin Luther King Jr. family licenses. There are things there we can't use as we may want to because they're licensed by the family. There's copyrights and a lot. But my question to, I have two questions. One, there's a considerable amount of uncontested material, I would say, in the archives that we know is owned by Pacifica and that we have control over. And I guess my question is, do we need to rethink a little bit about how the archives are going to be a part of this and whether or not the reputation, the visibility, the influence of Pacifica can be raised by including that material in this, because many, many programmers around the country, many people would be thrilled to get some of the original music and spoken word that reflects, I mean, I don't have to tell you some of the names that are in that collection. So I'm just thinking if the board needs to also look at how the archives will be involved, and maybe Brian and others who are on this task force can kind of like see how that archives will be a part of all this.
Thanks, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I'm just as dazzled as my colleague, Michael Woodson here. If I had not heard the rest of the board members, and if I heard only our able chairman and our programming chairman, I was ready to buy. I didn't care what kind of widget they were selling.
And think how high they donors are going to raise.
So, but however, in this process, I know that I love technology and I'm always fascinated by it. And it reminds me that I'm sure everybody remembers the dot-com boom. And there were venture capitalists. And when people came over there, they told them all this good stuff and the return on their money. And the venture capitalists heard them, and them alone. They were ready to throw in billions of dollars at it. And people came up to me and said, hey, you better go invest in this. I said, well, wait a minute. You know, it sounds like a hype to me a little bit. But I'm glad I didn't invest money in it. I know somebody made money off of it, but a lot of people lost money in it. I'm not saying that this will go in that direction. But what I am saying is that some of the questions that these board members are raising, they're pretty valid questions. Our task force, I don't know who was on it, but I see our general managers from various stations there raising questions of, they're very grounded in their practical experience of day-to-day programming and the station functioning and how the things work. And I'm also convinced that our foundation council has looked into this and the legal impediments to it, and he thinks they can resolve. However, my question is the monitoring of the violations of those legal agreements, how they will be monitored, who would enforce them, how are we going to do it, what kind of a staffing are we going to need, and yet at the same time, I also want to go in that direction where we cannot just sit there and say, how are we going to expand our audience? And so far, I have not seen is some kind of a scenario, a study that with concrete kind of proposal that comes over there that gives me dollars and figures, what kind of a financial impact it would have on Pacifica. Make whatever assumption you want to make, you see. So, anyway, so I'd like to see something like in that direction there. But, you know, Bertold Reimer said that create a budget with certain kind of assumptions. They say it's going to, how much it's going to cost, how we're going to recover the, whatever the benefits are going to be. And I'd like to see that.
I'm going to go down and quickly give the best answer I can, and then if other people want to, the questions. First, Ambrose is a very important question. I don't think that's the purview of the licensing task force. Our job is to get a license that can allow us to move forward. And with respect to the people who said, let's get a beta project out there, the thing that you need to get to start the beta is the license that lets you do this. So that's the first step, and that's our purview. In terms of institutionally, I think, you know, my own take is that the ED with the manager and the CFO should talk about how best organizationally to implement it, and we should ask our national executives to come back to us with a proposal that we would review how to do that. Because I think one thing the managers are reacting to is the fact that they've already got their plates essentially full just dealing with the stations as is. And asking them to take on a whole nother layer of activities is really a big request. So they have to have that conversation about how institutionally we can move this forward. And one of the things I would hope is while the licensing task force is moving that fork forward, this board asks that that be done. I also think that we don't have the personnel in the network as it exists right now, and so we need a preliminary budget to figure out how we fund advancing this, both in terms of people who are going to go solicit funds and in terms of moving other aspects of this forward. with respect to the semi-commercial paradigm, you know, I just have I'll speak from the heart. I have a funny paradigm because, you know, every time I turn on Pacifica, I hear some guy trying to sell a book. I mean, every time I hear some guy selling a book and some person who's given their life to try and inform people doing all this work in order to bring this person who's selling a book that says something important to an audience. So I don't trip on the fact that that person's going to try and earn a living at it. What I value is if they're willing to sign this license, they are making a permanent contribution to a media commonwealth that can never be reprivatized, that can never be restricted from people who can't afford to pay for it and say, you can't hear this, you can't use this, you can't share this until and unless you pay me. So that contribution, it's worth it to me to allow them to do that. And I feel like if we can't trust our programmers, then we have to deal with them being there. Monitoring. So I've just brought up monitoring. I just keep thinking, what if all the people who post on all these email lists attacking people for being not quite right were then perusing our offerings and emailing whoever was responsible for violations, right? And we just deputized them to find anything that was contrary to the mission. All that person would have to do would be sit in their office and read their email. And they'd find immediately anything that was wrong out there. And we'd establish policies over time of what we weren't going to do. Right? It would be easier than on the air. So that's my own point of view. And I think what you said about getting ISDN out there and getting it moving right away is true. I want to agree with Michael. When we did the Sound Posse thing, and the Sound Posse model created, there's now a Northwest Sound Posse, a Houston Sound Posse, a New York Sound Posse, a London Sound Posse. We had nothing to do with any of them, but it's just grown on its own. because of the idea. And it takes time, as everybody knows, to become a good programmer. So it takes a while. If not, exponential doesn't mean rapid growth instantly. Exponential means the rate of increase is proportional to how many people are doing it. So in the early going, it rises slowly, and then it takes off once you get that 100 monkey thing. The digital divide that AC brought up, if you get on a bus anywhere in this town, in any neighborhood, I can almost guarantee you that half the people will have headphones on, and the majority of those are not listening to FM. They're listening to a device that costs between $20 and $50. These things cost between $20 and $50. Now, where do you go to get content? Right now, yes, you do have to plug it into something connected to the Internet. Within a year or two, by the time we get through that slow phase into the rapidly rising phase, these things are going to be wireless enabled, and you'll be able to get them when you get content when you walk past the Starbucks. So personally, the digital divide thing I don't think is so huge. It was raised that Linux is a bad model because people who use software need software. I think people need media. The point here is of building a commonwealth of value that people can use and reuse for their own purposes over time, and deputizing everybody who uses it in redistribution. There are clear differences in the use of software versus the use of media content. It's not a perfect parallel, but it is the case that the people who know the open source movement, and particularly those who've made a lot of money using that kind of content, will understand and, I believe, donate to this. The management structure is the difficult part institutionally. It's the thing that I think is going to be the greatest barrier once we get over our questions about what we're allowing people to do. And again, I think that what we need to come out of this meeting with is a mandate to our management to work out the best way this can work. How can it be integrated? At what pace in the station? I am not interested in having this board dictate to any station manager, you have to do this and this and this, because the fact of the matter is it won't happen, and then we'll just fight about it. That goes for the archives as well. I had a conversation with Brian a while ago. I don't know if he still feels this way. He said he would be interested in the possibility of making some content available to see how it works. But this idea is not for the archives, because the archives has a lot of other challenges, right, and a lot of other money. There's no problem with seeing if this model works and how it works with the stuff that's born digitally, and then working with people who have a lot more on their mind and plate than just this. And again, if we start imposing and forcing this stuff on our management personnel, it's not going to go right. We need to get them to the point of wanting to do it. And beta test, yes, but I don't believe you can roll it out in this way unless you can get the license part done. So what we're going to do in terms of coming back to the board is come back with that license when it's done, hopefully within a month, and get the approval to go ahead with the starting to put content online on this basis. But we definitely need additional institutional resources, i.e. people whose job it is to make this stuff happen. We don't have them now. We need to work out budgets, and I don't believe in coming to the board and saying, yes, we're going to fund something until we have a budget plan. In fact, you're going to hear a motion tomorrow from the Finance Committee that we never do that. So that wasn't the intent. I think that answered all the questions I had written down. Even wanted a couple minutes, and the guys we're going to be asking to do a lot of this also wants to say something. Do you want to go first, Eva?
I don't care. Either way.
Sure. A couple of things. I wanted to make some suggestions. As you know, I love technology, and KPFK has grown tremendously over the last few years. So I think we need to look at, this is a really exciting proposal. What is it that we can do immediately that's cost-effective? And some of the things in the proposal we can do immediately. The progressive Wikipedia. Okay, we need to get all the all the Pacifica websites up to par with regards to podcasting, audio streaming, audio archiving. Those are some of the things that can happen. Blogs can happen immediately. So there's several steps that we can immediately, I think, and I don't know if anybody disagrees from the GMs, that won't be difficult for us to do, and also soliciting, you know, content from communities, from different communities for only online use. I think it's really important that we decide who's the audience we want to reach out to, and I think it's critical that we target youth. No matter who else we target, that one of the strategies is to really get out to youth and get youth involved. So, you know, I just really want us to move ahead and be able to address the issues that's not so problematic and implement that, you know, and then phase in all of the other areas in the proposal.
And if the term steal this record isn't copyrighted, maybe we could have a little site called Steal This Record. The kids might like that.
I think that all the arguments pretty much have been made. I think this is about intentions. What is the intention of the organization? Yes, there are going to be objections. There are, you know, technical issues to be resolved. But the question, the fundamental question that a governance body has to make is not how to solve every problem. That is a problem of implementation. The decision that you have to make is whether you want to begin to go down this road. I think that the world is going down this road. The internet is about 13 years old. We're now in the second or third phase of it. People now have options, many options that they didn't have before. We are already, to some extent, behind the curve. We cannot wait another 6 months or a year to make a fundamental decision as to whether we're going to begin down this road. Yes, we need to involve people at different levels in the organization in working out the specific problems, the copyright problems, the specific nature of the licenses, the question of payola and plugola, which is a problem that we already have, and we have been warned about repeatedly by our own attorneys. You know, this is not the problem. This is actually the solution to the problem, if you actually probe deeply enough. This is a solution to many of the issues that you all have been raising. The issue of how to reach out to younger listeners. The issue of how to become our true nationwide organization that goes beyond, you know, local interests and goes and reaches audiences that it's never been able to reach before. The board does not have to solve every objection or even address every objection. You take them into consideration, and then, but fundamentally what you have to decide is, do you want to do this? You have heard discussions for more than a year. Ever since the day I got here, we have been having these discussions. We've had two or three of them at this board. And we have a licensing group which anyone can join at any time and participate in, which will continue to debate and resolve these issues. Nothing will be imposed on anything. A bottom line assumption of this entire thing is that we will begin within a spirit of volunteerism. But we do have to begin. And we won't begin to allocate the resources and the time, management time, until the board is clear about where it wants to go. And so I would encourage you to begin to make a decision about this, whether it's to endorse every line in Dave's modest proposal. That is not the question. But to endorse something, you know, to endorse something to say we want to go into the area of digital distribution and licensing. We want to be part of this new marketplace of ideas. We are going to instruct our organization to find the way to do it, rather than to find the reasons not to do it.
Thank you. And Rose, please.
Thank you.
Right on.
I have a motion.
Oh,
amen.
Good.
Amen.
I move that the Pacifica management, that is the ED, the CFO, general managers, in consultation with our attorneys, plural, are hereby directed to develop a plan for the board's action no later than our next quarterly meeting to aggressively establish Pacifica's presence on the worldwide internet.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Actually, there's one issue. We already have a presence, so I might use expand instead of establish.
We don't.
Yeah, we voted on this last year.
We don't have
year.
An aggressively established. Okay. It is not aggressively established.
Aggressively, that's right. Okay. Yeah. So it's open for debate.
Is that specific enough?
Yes.
I heard what Ambrose said in response to your comment, but I'm still kind of confused. If we have six websites, and if some of the websites have pod streaming, what's the difference between that and aggressive expansion into the internet? In other words, it seems like Ambrose and the board is carefully not being specific about what we're proposing today. And so I just want to be clear that whatever we're proposing, and if we adopt it, whatever we adopt is what we'll get in April and what we'll get in the future, rather than such broad language come back with, oh, we already had it, or some broad language come back with something that we never anticipated. I think we ought to be a little bit more specific.
Would the board mind if I respond yet again? My feeling on the motion is we're assuming good faith with our management. They've heard the discussion, and the language is clear that we want an expansion beyond what we've already got. This is to establish a very much broader online initiative than just, yes, we did. We put what we're doing on the air on the web. And I don't feel a need to be any more specific after the discussion that's been heard in asking our management to come back to us with it. That's my own feeling.
I'll add the word satellite.
Lydia?
Well, because we already passed a motion to create the task force last year, I think that for purposes of consistency and so that we are on board that this is that same project of digital distribution, that if you can remember the language that we used to create that task force, we insert that in this motion and then we're done. Then we know it's the same thing. I agree with Thomas.
What
was the language?
No, but the licensing language is a different matter than establishing the online thing. The licensing I'll get the language.
Yeah, or even using
I'll
digital
get the language and I'll read it.
The digital distribution project.
Okay,
something that makes a reference to it, I think.
Sandra?
I have a question, please.
Is there a second to the request to close debate?
Second.
Okay, is there... Let's see. This is undebatable, right?
Right.
All right. Thanks. God, that shows how tired I am. All those in favor of closing... Two-thirds majority. All those in favor of closing debate on the motion, please raise your hand. All those opposed?
Two.
Motion carries.
Where's the third?
Lydia.
The motion carries.
Good. Three.
Okay.
One, two, three. And not relevant.
Sorry. Okay, so now all those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand.
I'm sorry.
This is all those in favor of the motion by Lane. Ambrose, would you reread the motion?
Yes.
Sorry.
I move that Pacifica Management, that is the ED, the CFO, general managers, in consultation with our attorneys, are hereby directed to develop a plan for the board's action no later than our next quarterly meeting to aggressively establish Pacifica's presence on the worldwide internet and satellite.
Just a point on terminology. I think it should either be the World Wide Web or the internet. If we're going to be distributing this broadly and we're saying we're
the
moving
WWI.
There, we should get the term exact.
Yeah, what is
the do you prefer the internet or the World Wide Web, Ambrose?
Doesn't matter.
Okay, let's say the internet. Okay, all those in favor? All those opposed? Passes without objection.
I've done the motion.
Yes, sir.
I move that Pacifica Management work closely with the Licensing and Distribution Task Force, period.
Okay.
Because
there's a second to that?
Did the work.
The intent is to ensure that management is present on the Licensing and Distribution Task Force calls and involved in those discussions. Is there a second to that?
Second.
It's been seconded. Margaret.
Yeah, perhaps a friendly amendment, which was the reason that I voted against calling the question, just to strengthen it up a little bit, because I'm all for this. And maybe this could be included in what Ambrose is suggesting, because I think that there have been some very good questions and problems raised by members of the board. And I think it would be a mistake to just go ahead and say, okay, go ahead and we're moving forward, and to act as though none of these questions were raised. So I'm wondering if, in addition to working with the management, the next time we come back to this issue, we come back with some proposals about how some of these questions and concerns that were raised are going to be addressed. That has nothing to do with slowing down the process, has nothing to do with the thing not moving forward, but the practicality of it. And I'm also wondering how much you're going to be able to move forward without any money. So, you know, that's just a question that I have, and maybe that could be dealt with in another way. So, Ambrose, I don't know if in your particular motion, it would be a friendly amendment to add in coming back to us, you know, addressing some of the concerns raised.
Could we just agree that by common consent that that is intended and we will do
that?
That
is definitely intended. And in terms of money, we've already passed motions that any proposal has to come back for the budget. Right. And the CFO is on this project.
Okay, well, I'm new, so I don't know these things, but in terms of coming back with some proposals around the question, I know it's assumed that we're all in good faith, but my experience has been you put it in writing, okay?
Absolutely.
The suggestion by the secretary is that the motion be amended with the words "with a response to questions raised."
That's good.
Is there any objection? Okay. Go ahead, Lisa.
I have a friendly amendment without putting any more work on tech people, questions but I definitely think that technology or the tech people should somehow be a part of this, because management can come up with whatever they want, but it's got to be something that's implementable that will be guided by what we can do with the technology. So I just think
Pete Caracas and John Almella have been active participants in the licensing and distribution task force, and will also be dealing with it through the tech committee.
Okay.
Is there any Thomas?
I wanted to make a motion to amend, but I need Ambrose to read his motion again.
Could you read the motion again, Ambrose?
Simply that Pacifica Management, developing this plan, work closely with the Licensing and Distribution Task Force.
Work closely with the licensing.
Wait, that's not.
And then we have the amendment.
It's the amendment.
With a response, in return, with the response to questions raised.
Was that date? April?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Next quarterly board meeting.
Okay. It's kind of awkward. Mm-hmm. With regard to. My motion is to amend Ambrose's motion in the following way. With the motion, with the resolution that was just adopted, that the management work with the Pacifica Task Force, is that what you said?
Yeah, the Licensing and Distribution Task Force
on the questions raised, including the questions about budget, the management structure, and the licensing. I agree with Margaret. I don't think we were specific about those questions. So when you recapped it, I thought you recapped it well. Those seem to be the three most troubling issues, and I'd like them to be specifically addressed.
Well, the issue with that, before I call for a second, is that the Licensing and Distribution Task Force is not dealing with two of those three components. We're dealing with the establishment of the licenses. His first motion is the motion that's really dealing with how we're going to get from management things that relate to the operational and the budget components of this. So to amend this on the Licensing and Distribution Task Force would be to add to the that task force, to add to its purview beyond just licensing. Is that what you want?
No, it sounds like that shouldn't be what I want. In other words, you seem to be saying that the Licensing and Distribution Task Force focuses on licensing, and then if they deal with budgeting and management, those are concerns they're not familiar with.
Ambrose's first motion is asking the management to come forward with a proposal that's going to deal with those issues. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's okay. So no, proposal. I withdraw the idea of amending Ambrose's last motion, but that's why I was concerned about the first.
Okay.
So
okay. Mary?
I apologize.
Well, yeah, I was simply going to say that we already just have an amendment that it inserts the language with the response to the questions raised here. So that would include the questions Thomas just mentioned, it's already in here.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
those three plus all the others.
Okay. Call the question.
The question's been called. Yeah, is there a second?
Second.
Is there any objection to closing debate? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion as amended? Seeing none. Okay, I think in the interest of time, we need to move on to our public comment now. Mm-hmm. And then our auditor has been waiting to give us his report.
Is there any way we can have any lunch in this
pardon
process?
Me? What?
Point of information, can we have any lunch in here at all?
No, you can't have food in here.